Well, hello. My name is Anthony Bartolo, and I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft. And today, I've got Pierre Roman with me.
How you doing?
So we're the team from canitpro.net, and we're here to talk about getting started with Windows 10 for the IT professional. Pierre, a lot of changes coming with Windows 10.
Massive change. Well, there are massive changes into the way Windows 10 works and the way the value that the users are going to get. But in terms of the deployment and management, there are changes, but nothing that is insurmountable.
Similar to what was experienced before on client software, however, there is more in regards to control and enablement on specific tasks on Windows 10 to allow for that experience as required by an IT professional to ensure that the organization is achieving what they need to achieve on client software.
Well, I think that the one of the main point when you talk about controlling IT professional in the environment is that Windows 10 gives you more tools in terms of management, in terms of deployment, in terms of managing untrusted devices and everything else. So in terms of the MDM conversation, it gets much easier on that one.
So why don't we take a look in regards to what we'll be talking about today. So in today's docket, we have what's new with Windows 10 deployment. We'll be looking at Windows 10 management and the Windows Store and how to customize the Windows Store specific to your organization's needs. We'll be looking at runtime provisioning for Windows 10, which is a very interesting tool that will be made available on Windows 10 when it's launched. Windows 10 mobile device management as well. Very interesting that we have the same kernel now across a plethora of devices, and so how to manage that in one failed swoop as opposed to going through multiple screens. Protecting tour data with containers without boxing yourself in, and a new era of threat resistance for the for the Windows 10 platform, and secure authentication with Windows Hello.
Hello.
And finally, Windows as a service, what does it mean for your business?
Absolutely.
Looking forward to the conversation today?
Yep.
So really quickly, if you haven't seen it already, we're going to take a quick look at Windows 10. I'm actually, surprised as how many, IT professionals have yet to actually dabble in Windows 10. We did a tour across Canada talking about that, and one of the biggest things was, hey, I don't have the hardware to test on Windows 10 on, and I don't have the time.
Also, I get in terms of the public sector folks that I've been dealing with, they're telling me that it hasn't yet been approved in some of their areas,
yep.
So they can't run it in production on metal. So what we've been suggesting to them is running it into a virtual environment.
Yeah, so actually we have it here on my Surface. We're actually running Windows 10 on a VM. And so here it is here. As you can see, the desktop, it actually boots directly to the desktop. And I can click on the Start button. And my start menu is back.
A
lot of IT professionals are
just
very
like Arnold.
A lot of IT professionals are very happy about that. The tiles do exist. However, that is completely customizable. If you do not want the tiles, there are policy sets available that will disable the tiles altogether. I have actually been talking about how to customize the tiles to ensure that the tiles meet the requirements of an organization using the tiles as a dashboard.
Yeah, so you can build your own. You can build your own dashboard and put that there. And
in essence, you're just customizing the XML file specifically to your organization's needs. Another question in terms of Windows 10 has been, well, that's great. You've included now the Spartan browser. But what happens to IE? So what happens to IE? And IE is not going away.
No, they're both there.
Yeah.
So they're both there. And we'll talk about that a little bit in the Windows 10 deployment section, so in the first module, as to what the differences are and what they're used for.
Yep. So why don't we get started? Up first, we'll be talking about Windows deployment. And so take it away, Pierre.
All right. So what is new in Windows 10 deployment? Well, we've been looking at deployment for a long time, and I've been doing deployments. I've been in IT for over 25 years, which makes me pretty old. Pretty old. But the process really hasn't changed in 25 years. You discover your environment, you assess what you have, you target where you're going to go, and then you deploy. The deployment part is typically the easy part. today in this session, we're actually going to talk about the deployment part. We're not assessing and discovering your environment. So this is all stuff that you should still do in any type of deployment. But right now, when we look at Windows 10, we used to have the recommendation that, like, go to a gold image, go to a wipe and reload. Well, I think it's the end of the wipe and reload.
Well, you know, and what's interesting with that is that in the paradigm that we're moving more to a mobile-first world, you have the scenario where, you know, on a mobile device, you never wipe the device when you upgrade the OS. You're always upgrading in place. So do you see that now coming to the desktop in regards to that?
Yes, in a way. One of the issues with, or one of the recommendation in the past for wiping and reload is because of all of the drivers of the applications and all of the potential garbage that might have been on that machine that you didn't want to bring over to the new OS. But in the way the OS actually works now, it makes things a lot easier. So we're recommending a kind of like a managed in-place upgrade. It's our new inspirational goal, for example, that we can think about it that way. It's really a move away from the traditional deployment method, and we want to leverage the OS tools. So it's like a setup.exe as part of the image with a bunch of command line switches that will use the install.wim that's part of the Windows 10 deployment. Windows 8. I have to put another $5 in the swear jar. Windows 10 deployment, and then will deploy to an existing machine. Of course, you can also deal with what you do with new machines, new devices. You want to provision new devices that you're getting. So if you're getting a device that already has a Windows 10 image, but it's a Windows Pro and you want to move to a Windows Enterprise, there are ways of doing that. And of course, IE 11 may be a challenge in some of your environments. So we're going to talk about that. But all that is to make the runtime configuration a little easier, customizing without imaging, so you don't have to like install everything, configure it the way you want, and then capture that image anymore. You can do it more streamlined approach into the deployment. And of course, reduced validation, and that way, if you take all these in consideration, it's a reduced deployment costs. Also, when we talk about app and device compatibility, because that's typically when you have your deployment, when you do your assessment and your discovery, you discover all the apps and everything else. So the hardware requirements are unchanged. So if you've got machines that are running Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, no problem. The hardware requirements have not changed one bit from those versions to Windows 10. There's a strong desktop app compatibility story because every app that's in the store will work. And every app, I would say not every, I'd say high 90s% of the applications that run on Windows 7 and Windows 8 will run on Windows 10 because we haven't really changed the kernel. We haven't really changed like the basis of the Windows System 32 engine. That hasn't changed. So if it runs on Windows 7, runs on Windows 8, not guaranteed, but high probability that it'll work without any problems. So you do have to do your testing. If you're doing your testing in the application, you may have to go back to your application reseller and maybe get a support statement in terms of will it be supported or not. And of course, there's Internet Explorer for enterprises. When we talk about Internet Explorer for the enterprises, there's a couple things that come into play. If you're running right now older versions of IE, so they're running the older versions that run on Windows 7, check the support.microsoft.com/lifecycle because those versions of IE will go out of support out of January 2016. It's coming. We're looking at 6 months.
And Microsoft also provides the tools to address that, specifically in IE 11 with compatibility mode.
Mm-hmm. So in IE 11 is a natural stepping stone to Windows 10 because it's built into Windows 10.
Yep.
But IE 11, so we do provide enterprise mode for IE that will allow you to support legacy apps and to emulate Windows 7 or IE 7 and IE 8 to give you the ability to overwrite document types specifically all the way up to, I think, IE 5. Not 100% sure on that version and up. So, and also provide you lots of reporting tools to discover some issues. So if you're running an intranet or an application internally that you try to run in compatibility mode and something fails, you'll be able to report on it. So Windows 11 with enterprise compatibility mode is kind of a stepping stone to get you ready for that. But now when we look at that, as you mentioned, we have IE11 and Edge.
Yes.
Why? Well, first of all, IE11 is there to support your legacy web apps that are you running either internally or externally. But Edge is support anything that's new or anything that's HTML5 that's on the market. And of course, when you're in Edge, if you get to a site and it tells you that it can't be displayed, right in the menu, you say, show me an IE. So it will start IE11 and show you the site in that browser.
Yep.
So they're both there. They both have their role and their function, but they will allow you to do the cutover and give you that time to upgrade your web apps either naturally or to something that's supported by HTML5.
Actually, in the Edge browser, there is the functionality that you can actually swap to IE. So if the site's not rendering properly in the Edge browser, you can actually click on the settings and it'll say show this in Internet Explorer, and will automatically flip over to Internet Explorer when you click on it, and then show the site in there to address the compatibility issues with legacy sites.
Yep. But we really want to talk about deployment choices.
Yep.
So traditional way, we have the wipe and load. So traditional capture, install the application, capture the data and settings. You put your application, all your drivers, everything there, inject those drivers, install the apps, capture that. Put that onto a Windows deployment server or a system center. That's still an option for most of your scenarios.
Yep.
So if this is the way you're doing it now, nobody is telling you that you can't continue doing it this way. However, now we have the unplace upgrades that will basically, you're offloading that work to Windows. So the Windows EXE, the setup.exe, will start the install, take out all the app settings and everything else, drivers, set that aside, lay out a new OS, and then bring back or merge those apps and those drivers right into the new installation. So if you've got Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, that's the recommended way of doing that. So do an in-place upgrade. So all your applications and all your settings and all your drivers will move over. If you're still on Vista and XP, little testing might be in order, but I don't think it's supported this time. And of course, at this point, we're not RTM yet. So we're not released. So everything we're talking about today is based on the latest preview versions that are available. And of course, you have the other version or the other option, which is the provisioning. So you configure new devices. Provisioning a new machine is... it's not a machine that's already in your environment. It's a machine that you're bringing in. It's either a bare metal machine that has no OS on it, or it's a machine that's coming from a vendor that has a OEM image on it.
Yep.
So what do you want to do? You want to transform that device. You don't want to reinstall everything. The drivers are already there. The machine's already working. So you may want to just take it from a pro version to an enterprise version, remove all the extra items, because of course we know that sometimes OEMs will put some of their own apps and configuration on those that you may want to strip out. So that's another way of doing that. So these are new capabilities for the new devices that you're bringing in to your environment. Oh, and of course, one quick note is if you're doing an in-place upgrade and your hard drive is encrypted with BitLocker, well, thank God we know how to deal with BitLocker. So the setup will actually suspend BitLocker, do the upgrade. When everything is set and done, we'll restart BitLocker because we know how to work with it. However, if you've got third-party encryption tools, you may want to have to turn it off and decrypt your drive before and then re-encrypt it after. If you don't, the setup.exe will copy all the stuff. After the first reboot, when it tries to do what it needs to do, it may end up with a blue screen of unhappiness.
Yes.
So when you have third-party encryption, like disk encryption, make sure to turn that off before you start. But we are working very hard with the encryption vendors to just try to integrate those steps into the in-place upgrade process. So moving in place. So it's the preferred option for the enterprises. It's supported on 7, 8, and 8.1, of course. Consumers that are running those and want to go to Windows 10 can use a Windows update, but enterprise, typically you want more control.
Correct.
The role of IT is to provide the business units the tools and capabilities for them to achieve their goals, but we want to retain a little control.
Yeah.
Control for security, control for what gets deployed.
Yep. Secure enablement.
Secure enablement.
Yep.
So Windows Update may not be the right way of doing that. So use the System Center Configuration Manager and MDT. We'll talk a little bit further about that in a little bit. It'll use a standard Windows 10 images, so the install.wim. It'll automatically preserve your existing apps, your settings, and your drivers, as I said earlier.
Yep.
It's fast, it's reliable, and the nice thing is that the automatic rollback. I have a machine at home that I've deployed the newest build on the Windows.insider.
Yep.
For some reason, that machine had an issue with a specific driver I had installed, so it kind of blew up halfway through. But I had already stepped away from the machine. So I set this in, rebooted, started it set up. I walked away, made myself a cup of coffee. By the time I came back, it had already rebooted. I logged on thinking, okay, I'm at the next build. And no, I get the little message saying problem was found and it did the rollover. So the automatic rollback, if any issues are configured. That was fantastic. I've had so many issues in the past with trying to install something and it fails halfway through and you end up having to wipe the machine and reload it from scratch. But this one, the rollback was effortless. That's the word, effortless.
One quick add to that as well. If you have a machine that's domain joined, so it's a pro version of Windows 8 or Windows 7 or Enterprise, and they're domain joined in regards to access to the system, they will not get the notification for migration to 10. You will not see the pop-up come up to say, hey, Windows 10 is available. This is, you know.
The Windows updates.
Correct.
Deployment. Yes.
So because it was to your point in regards to, you know, as an IT professional, you want to have control in enabling your organization to best efforts put forward. And you don't want the end user going, oh, there's a new OS. Let's click on that and do the update ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? That may pose a challenge because apps haven't been tested, what have you. So when that, you know, that will not occur on a domain joined pro or enterprise offering of 7 or 8 when 10 becomes available.
Good. Yeah, it's a good thing. So moving in place is also a simplified process, and we've built that based on the experience that we got from Windows 8, Windows 8.1. It'll be popular. But I do suggest that you pilot the process with your customer to upgrade your machines. There's feedback integrated with Windows 10. And of course, we are working, like as I said, very hard with our ISVs in terms of third-party encryption. But right now, if you're doing it, the installation, so you get with a, I just have snapshots of desktops. We don't have the time in this module to actually go through a whole setup. But if you have your desktop, and you run the setup.exe or the package that you've gotten. So you'll get this standard OK from Contoso, deploying a Windows 10 upgrade. It runs the information, puts all the information. When it reboots, then it goes through the installation. We've also seen that ring now.
Yep.
From go from 10 to 70 to 97. When it's done, it reboots. It looks exactly the same. It's retained, like the background, the settings,
yep,
the applications on the Windows 10. It also retained all the applications that may have been in your start menu and your start screen.
Yep.
So all that is there, and it's really very easy and very painless. Which is always good.
I know, and IT professionals have been asking for this for a long time because the fact that IT professionals, you know, struggle with the amount of time that they have to deploy. And so if it's a seamless transition into 10, you know, much more beneficial for them, a lot less headaches, and a lot more, you know, interested or eager then to move to that platform once they've done testing.
Absolutely. So provisioning is not imaging. So provisioning is to take your machine off the shelf. So you buy in the machine. If you're a very large enterprise and you get like skids of new laptops that you're going to deploy, or tablets, or desktop, because it's one OS to rule them all. You can install that on all that hardware. So you apply a provisioning package. So it's a new way of provisioning for the hardware. So you take that provisioning package and you apply it directly on top of the image that the OEM might have put on there. Of course, if there's no image at all on there, it's still ways of deploying it.
Yep.
For an enterprise use case, it'd be to take that new PC, you apply the enterprise package, provisioning package, which applies the configs and everything else, and when it reboots, the device is ready for use. So your lead time, your time to deployment, your time to actually being used is much shorter. And of course, it built on top of the MDM support that's in the OS already. So being on top, being that MDM, that's mobile device management, because right now we're looking at devices as all mobile.
Yep.
Regardless of whether or not it's a desktop, a laptop, a Surface.
Computing has changed.
Different. And we're dealing with them in terms of these are all going to be, we assume they're all going to be mobile and managed that way to kind of remove that barrier from the, this is a, within on-premises and off-premises.
And it's a huge advantage because if you have the MDM controls in the OS natively, it's not an additional bolt-on in terms of software. Mm-hmm. And so less resources are actually being utilized in terms of computing time and memory and storage because of it.
Absolutely. So if you're going to build your own image and your own configuration and imaging center, there's a new tool that's going to be made available called the Windows Imaging and Configuration Designer. We love long names.
That's a mouthful, I tell you.
That's a mouthful. And the way it works is you can start with a pre-existing project,
yep,
or you can create your own, and you basically say where it's going to be, where it's going to go. You give it whether or not it's a common or for tablet, desktops, or laptops, yep, or if it's phone. Once you've set up the interface, you can import a package that's already pre-made, and so you can modify it.
Yep.
One of the really nice things that I like about this one is you can actually put in the your new key to change this queue.
Oh,
so if you're on Pro and you want to go to Enterprise, yep, you don't have to wipe and reload. You can just change this queue. And for those of you online right now who are basically taking snapshots of that key will not activate. So the key that you see on screen will not activate. It's a setup key only. And once the machine, that key gets applied,
yep,
and deployed, as soon as the machine reboots, it's going to start looking for a KMS server.
Yes.
And if you're in an enterprise settings, a KMS server is something you would want to have anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, if you're doing it, if you don't have a KMS system, you can put a Mac key in there and use it that way. But for the sake of our little example here, this is a setup key. So, no, I'm not giving you the super secret deployment key from Microsoft. I've had that happen once. I did a presentation at a user group, and I had a setup key on there, and all of a sudden I saw a bunch of people
taking pictures of it. Yep.
Not good. Anyway, so once you've got that, you go to your provisioning, your package configuration, you give it a name, who's going to be the owner, the version, because you want to keep version control.
Yes.
And hopefully notes as to what that version does versus what the old version was.
Yes.
You can package your security, so enable package encryption. You can sign the package so it can be trusted.
Yep.
These are all things that, as IT for security and control, we want to look into and consider while doing our setups. And once it's done, where are you going to output it? It runs, it'll generate its setup, and we'll end up with a successful package creation.
Yep.
So once you have that, all you have is a file that you can copy anywhere. So it's the enterprise package that we've called it here.
Yep.
So runtime, you can actually put it on a flat file on the share and have people double click it.
Yep.
If you're doing it manually, like in a small lab, you can do that to test. But of course, you can use our typical other flexible methods. So USB, tethering. Yep. You can send an email with the link, but of course, MDT, System Center, all of those deployment methods are still available or still...
Actually, we're going to talk about in a later module, we'll actually be talking about provisioning from this image and how it's done across devices. You know, and what's interesting is that it's done on your mobile device, on your tablet, on your phone, you know, whatever you decide your deployment's going to happen on, can do it through NFC, yep. Can do it through a USB key, and we'll talk about that later on.
So we can think of image provisioning or machine provisioning, not much as a provisioning, but a re-imaging or a transformation.
Yep.
So you're taking the machine with a blank OEM image on it, and you're transforming it to something that will run in your environment
yep.
with your apps, your configuration. So enrolled into an MDM solution internally or externally
yep.
with Intune, and then be able to control, deploy, manage that machine
yep.
Without all of the headaches of traditional deployments.
Yep.
However, traditional deployments are still there. So we have enhanced the existing tool set. So in this, a new assessment and deployment toolkit will support Windows 10, but still continues to support Windows 7, Windows 8.
Yes.
There's going to be minor updates to System Center 2012 and 2012 R2 to support the newer builds.
Yep.
So there will be some kind of service pack for System Center that will be available for support to Windows 10. There was a preview of MDT that's available on Kinect, I believe,
yes,
right now.
Is.
That's that allows you to support for the Windows 10 with the build 10.074. So you can download that on Kinect and start your testing right
yep.
away if you're interested. But there'll be minor updates to the MDT 2013 to add that support. In terms of the existing deployment process, it will feel very natural. Because if you're already deploying Windows 7, Windows 8 images using System Center, using MDT, like the process really won't change, so it'll feel natural. You'll just drop in a new Windows 10
yep.
image and use it. You can capture Windows 10 and use it for wipe and load if you require. But the re-imaging instead of the wipe and load is something that I'm getting more of a feel for.
And that's important, right? You don't want to have that much. You still want to have choice. If you still deploy through via MDT or through System Center, you still want that availability to you, right?
Yeah, rip and replace is always a barrier to deployment.
Yeah.
If you say, okay, I want to move to this OS or I want to move to this solution, but I have to rip out everything I've already got,
yeah.
the investment in money and license and time setting it up.
That doesn't work.
And also, your investment in learnings,
yes.
like all the stuff that you've learned, how to deploy, how to manage, how to use those solutions. You don't want to rip that out and
yep.
replace it with something new because you're losing that corporate knowledge, that IT support knowledge.
Yep.
But the new tool, so like for example, the assessment and deployment toolkits will be enhanced with
yes.
some new parts. So the imaging and configuration designer I just showed you a little bit.
Yep.
It will have updated tools such as the user state migration tools. DISM is also in there, but we'll have new commands to support and the ability to create an image as a compact OS. So to eliminate, but to reduce the footprint. As I said, the preview is available on Kinect and the on MSDN.
Yep.
But when we talk about reducing the OS footprint or the compact OS, we are looking at compressed all Windows file to save disk space. We're talking, and this is completely transparent to the users.
Yes.
Completely transparent to the person actually at the workstation. It's a successor to WimBoot with fewer limitations.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, the in-place upgrades, you can't not do in-place upgrades on machines that are boot from VHD or Windows to Go keys. So if you try that, you may run into some issues.
Good update on that. Yeah.
I just thought about it.
Yeah.
It's going to make it very easy to deploy and will give you some space savings, which typically is not a big issue because disk space is not the most expensive part of your machines.
However, just did the deployment on a Dell Venue Pro 8, which I have here, had to use the compact OS methodology because of the fact that it's 32
gigs. It's only a 32 gig
flash drive. So in regards to that, so the compact OS offering was a huge savings for me in terms of that enablement to deploy it on that drive, because it's hard to move files off to do the upgrade and move it back. You shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And so in having it in a compact OS deployment saved my tail in terms of that update.
Yeah. So reducing the footprint, it's not just about compressing the files that we have. It's also about reducing all the add-ons that we're putting into that. So in the past, if you wanted to have a recovery partition, then you'd have to carve out piece of your hard drive as a recovery partition and put your recovery images there.
Yep.
Well, you no longer have to do that. So there's no extra disk space required for your recovery partition. It leverages the existing OS files, and it will reconstruct the OS to recover from a massive failure. But it's not going to require that separate partition. So we save space and we save footprint there also. It will preserve the updates, which is something I ran into a little long ago. Well, I had an image for my recovery image.
Yep.
Was really old. So when I restored my recovery settings after my first reboot, and all of a sudden I get the message that it needs the reboot to apply an update, and I go, okay. So I reboot the machine, and then now it's installing 1 out of 34 updates. No. So this will recover or will preserve the updates, at least the last 28 days of the updates. Your recent driver updates will be maybe discarded, so you got to be careful with that. And your language packs actually will be supported or will be preserved.
Yep.
So there's some customization that's preserved and some customization that's not. You really have to go through it and figure it out. There's more documentation online for that.
Yes.
Oops. And some of the customization. So since your last update, if you've customized your applications, the apps, user installed applications, so stuff that didn't come from the store, some from the store but installed by the users, stuff like that, that will not be preserved in the recovery process. And there is also a new remote wipe capability to allow administrators to trigger full reset of the machine.
Yep. Which has now been extended to the desktop, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
So if you're executive with a laptop with lots of sensitive information on it, leaves it in the cab or at a restaurant like you almost did
last night,
you can now go and remote wipe that device. So that machine, when that machine gets that poison pill, everything will be reset on that. Because it's not the hardware and that we're concerned about, that's the information that's on it, especially in this age of breaches and leaks.
And that's been around on the mobile side for a long time. And bringing that to the desktop now, hugely important in terms of controlling those leaks and that information getting out to the wrong hands. We'll talk more about that in a future module as well.
Yep. So MDT, with MDT 2013 Update 1, will give you all those updated tools in terms of it works with the ADK for Windows 10. It has a new upgraded task sequence that you'll use, and will also integrate with System Center Configuration Manager, but that not yet. We have to wait for the update to System Center.
Yep.
And of course, there's going to be additional enhancements, so split WIM support with media, so it'll be useful for UEFI.
Yep.
Machines.
Yep.
Because I know in the past I've set up like USB boot machines.
Yeah.
And I was trying to deploy or boot from that USB device on a UEFI machine and wondering why it didn't, because that's the signature block
right
there.
Yep.
So there's a specific way of doing that, but it is supported now. And of course, MDT 2013 Update 1 will have any bug fix that we can squeeze into it. And of course, System Center Configuration Manager will be supported. Configuration Manager 2007, 2012, 2012 R2, and VNEX.
In 2007, we'll only support management, not deployment.
Exactly. So that's why I put that little screen there. So the management will be supported by all of them for this deployment. It's only 2012, 2012 R2, and VNEX, which is due sometimes in 2016, believe.
Yes, I believe so.
So stay tuned on that one. The volume activation, there's no change on that. So there's no change in the process. There is changes in the keys, though. So Windows Update will be needed to support those Windows 10 with existing KMS. So you'll need to do an update on that.
Yep.
New KMS and Mac keys will be needed. So if you've got volume license keys that you have on your KMS, you'll have to look into that. But you also continued support for Active Directory-based activation. So that none of that changes. You just need to update the key itself.
Yep.
The process, the tools, everything that's built around that stays the same. You just need to update the keys. And of course, for server compatibility, full support for existing versions. It'll work with Active Directory schemas and functional levels. WSUS will support Windows 10. Group policies, it'll support it, but Windows 10 specific policies, you'll need new ADMX files.
Correct.
So if you're using or if you're deploying GPOs to Windows 10 machines specifically, don't use your Windows 7 or later OS templates. Make sure you have the right ones.
Yep.
And of course, WMI filters can be your friends on that one, so you don't end up deploying a policy to a machine that will make it unusable.
Yep.
So you really want to consider your approach if you're running Windows 7, Windows 8, or evaluating deploying Windows 8.1. If you're on 8 or 8.1, you just basically keep going. Just your upgrade to Windows 8 first, and then plan your upgrade for Windows 10 for all your devices.
Yep.
It's pretty straightforward. So on that end, there's nothing earth-shattering about new deployments in Windows 10. There is tons of stuff of value in terms of IT professionals that will save time, headaches, and deployment. In most deployment scenarios, but whatever you're running now will continue to work. Plus, the new ways of doing in-place upgrades may end up being a huge time saver and value add for you and your enterprises.
So, course of action, plan properly for your deployment. Ensure that you have the best tools in place. You can use existing tools, obviously, with the upgrades that are coming if you don't want to change your traditional methods. But if you have the opportunity to look at the newer methods of deployment, do so, because it could be a huge time saver for your organization.
Yes, and there were a number of sessions at Microsoft Ignite in May earlier this year that were dealing specifically into IE. So there was a session like 75 minutes worth of just how you deal with IE. There were other sessions on Windows 10 deployments and Windows 10 management. So I highly recommend that you go to myignite.com or on channel9.msdn.com and look at the sessions for that if you want more info and maybe some live demos on that. However, as soon as we get RTM copies, we'll be spinning out demos and putting them online as fast as we possibly can.
Definitely.
So with that being said,
that concludes module number one.
Absolutely.
So stay tuned. We'll be starting with module number two, what's new in Windows 10 management and the Windows Store momentarily.
All right. See you in a bit.
Cheers.